I would like to start this evening by reading a poem that Master wrote. Those of us that were here for meditation heard Dr. Lewis, who was Master's first disciple in the United States. He read this poem at the beginning of our meditation, but so many of you weren't here that I'd like to read it because it's such a beautiful statement just of who Master was, of all of what he wanted to and continues to want to bring to us if we'll just receive him, if we're just ready for him. He wrote this poem in 1940 and apparently had a wonderful evening with many of his disciples, I think very much like Swamiji did, although Swamiji was not there in 1940, where he would write a line or two and then pass it around for everybody to read it. And apparently they were up half the night while he wrote it. So I'd like to read it for everybody now and then comment on it a little bit. It's called When I Am Only a Dream. I come to tell you all of him and the way to encase him in your bosom and of the discipline that brings his grace. Those of you who have asked me to guide you to my beloved's presence, I warn you through my silently talking mind or speak to you through a gentle, significant glance or whisper to you through my love or loudly dissuade you when you stray away from him. But when I shall become only a memory or a mental image or silently speaking voice, when no earthly call will ever reveal my whereabouts in unplumbed space, when no shallow entreaty or stern stentorian command will bring from me an answer, I will smile in your mind when you are right. And when you are wrong, I will weep through my eyes, dimly peering at you in the dark, and weep through your eyes, perchance. And I will whisper to you through your conscience, and I will reason with you through your reason, and I will love all through your love. And when you are able no longer to talk to me, read my whispers of eternity. Eternally through it, I will talk to you, and unknown I will walk by your side and guard you with invisible arms. And as soon as you know my beloved and hear his voice in silence, you will know me again more tangibly than you knew me in this earth plane. And yet, when I am only a dream to you, I will come to remind you that you too are not but a dream of my heavenly beloved. And when you know you are a dream, as I now know, we will be ever awake in him. Such an extraordinary explanation in words so simple that we can all understand them, about just what is happening, who he is, how he is, how he'll smile through us, cry through us, how he'll beckon to us, just so beautifully written through your conscience, just like pay attention and I will be there. And really making it perfectly clear, even at the end saying, and when you know you are a dream, as I now know, we will be ever awake in him. So beautiful, Master saying to us, everything I am, you can be too. Late this afternoon, when I already thought I knew what I was going to talk about, I went over to my office and I just picked up the path, Swami's, the new path, and I read chapter 38, which is a chapter called The Last Years. We'll hear a lot of the readings from that chapter tonight. But where Swamiji, no, the last days, very important. And Swamiji really describes so beautifully in there so much of how Master lived those last days in his life with such focus and clarity, reaching out to each individual disciple and giving them something that he knew they needed. Swamiji in that chapter says, for the years that he had been there, he said, Master scolded me. He said, often because I would speak quickly without thinking about the effect my words could have, or maybe because it was taking me too long to understand him. He said he would always tell me, I only scold those I know who can hear it, meaning my very special disciples, those who have ears to hear, I scold them. But Swamiji said, still I felt a little hurt. And then the night before March 6th, he just took Swamiji aside and he said, I want you to know that you have pleased me in a very great way. Swamiji said it was just so beautiful to hear, that it was just one example. Swamiji had asked Master some time before, have you connected with all of your disciples that you were meant to connect with in this incarnation? And Master said to him very thoughtfully, no, there are a few more. And then over the next 2 years, those few came, one by one. And Swamiji was watching and commenting on it in the path about how Master would greet them. And Swamiji would ask him every once in a while, now have they all come? And Master would say, no, they haven't come. And Swamiji just watched as Master's life went on, and one by one, each soul that he was meant to connect with, every single one of those souls appeared to him, some at the in a worldly way, some of them in the very last minute. And he was giving each of them what they needed. There's a story in there where he gave a woman, one night he was giving out roses, and he gave one of the women a pink rose. And she said, but I don't want a pink rose, I want a red rose. And Master said, what I give you, you take. And it was such a poignant statement of how little we can know about what these masters are really doing, why it is so important for us to attune ourselves to them, as Master kept saying, as Swamiji kept saying, to really allow them through their energy, their magnetism, to communicate with us, to fill us, to guide us intuitively, not intellectually, but so that we begin to know not only what they're teaching us, but so that we have the wherewithal, because they've given us the key to do this, to understand many things long after they're gone on our own. I had a profound experience a number of years ago now. Maybe a couple of you have heard it, but I've rarely shared it. But it just came to me today in a way that I felt to, because it's a story of how little we know about what's going on and how deeply we have to learn to tune into and trust our guru. But I have a very dear friend who had a daughter who I was very close with, a real second and sometimes first mom. We loved each other unconditionally. I think we still do, for decades. And then she very poignantly disappeared from my life. She quit calling. She was rude when we were together. It was very painful, actually. And I never, to this day, I don't know what happened. But I never felt inclined to ask. But I'm still very much in touch with her mother. And one night I was with her mother. And her mother told me that she had had a very big problem with her leg, an abscess, that they were having trouble draining and healing. This young woman lives on the East Coast. Her mother lives here. And even though her mother said to me, but she's better now, she'll be able to go back to work next week, even though she's not healed, it just grabbed me in a way that was inexplicable. I had to fight an urge to get on a plane and fly to the East Coast, and it was absurd, logically, because she didn't need me. I don't know that she would have wanted me anyway, but she wasn't even in any medical trouble. I had no excuse. But I wanted to get on a plane and go. But instead, I came home that day, and I sat down at my altar, and I said to Master, I am begging you to hear my prayer. And I said to him, I know I'm not supposed to beg you. I know you've told us that over and over, but I'm begging you, please send my love to her. Let her feel that I love her and let her heal in that love. And I sat to meditate with my hands up like this in front of my altar. And in a moment, I opened my eyes and my hands were still up like this, but it was 45 minutes later. It was so confusing to me. It was like a lapse of time. I didn't even try and figure it out. But the next morning, I wrote her a little email. We hadn't connected in a couple of years. And I said, honey, I want you to know Mom told me what's going on, and I just want you to know that I am loving you. That no matter what's happening in our lives, the love hasn't changed. And she wrote me back immediately, and she said to me, Aunt Sal, she calls me Aunt Sal, obviously. She said, you won't believe this. That's all she wrote. So I write back, I think I probably will. She said, this is so strange, you'll think I'm nuts. I write back, no, honey, I don't think I'll think you're nuts. I don't think there's anything you could tell me. Well, I don't think I can tell you. I said, tell me if you want to tell me. So she says to me, email, I had a dream about you last night. Excuse me. And she said, in the dream, you came up and you got me out of bed and you picked me up in your arms and you carried me downstairs. And there's this other part of the dream that's less relevant. Some catastrophe had happened in Asia and many, many, many people died in real life. And she said, all those dead bodies were in my living room. And she said, now you know how I feel about death, which was not good. But she said, somehow you told me it's fine, and I believed you, and I wasn't afraid. And she said, but here's the thing. She said, you were holding me too tight. It was too tight. And I wanted to say to you, let me go. But she said, something kept telling me, you will never be loved like this again. You have never been loved like this. You will never be loved like this. Don't ask her to put you down. And then she said, after we made these rounds downstairs, you took me upstairs and you put me back in my bed. So I said to her, by that time, knowing, do you remember what time it was? And of course, it was those 45 minutes. And I said to myself, what do you make of something like that? What do you make of something like that? We cannot figure that out ever. That is the clearest thing that has ever happened in my life that says to me, these masters, our master, is always with us in ways that we cannot begin to fathom. Even when it plays out in our life, we have no way of understanding it other than to know that it is absolute and pure love. There's a story that I think Swamiji told it, I don't know, about a professor in Czechoslovakia. He never met Master, but he had written to Master, had something to do with him. And Master had either initiated him from a distance into Korea or blessed him. I don't know what the story was. But one day that man in Czechoslovakia had somebody knock on his door. And it was somebody who said, I understand you're a yoga teacher and I'm here and I know we have to keep this quiet because Czechoslovakia had a lot of communist informers at the time. But I really want to learn yoga, and I really want you to teach me yoga. And this professor was very confused about what to do, because if he made the wrong choice, he would die, and he knew that. So he just went inside for a minute and prayed, And when he opened his eyes, Master was standing, clear as day, right behind this man, shaking his head no. And then he said to the man, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't teach yoga. I don't even know yoga. And it turned out later that man was a communist informer, and he would have died. We need to just tell ourselves, this is what they have to bring us. And Master says here, I will come to you to remind you. He will come to us in any way that we will let him come. It doesn't matter one iota whether he's in that body or not. All that matters is how hard we're willing to work to attune ourselves, how much energy we'll bring to everything we do, how much we will serve in his name. You know, just today, the Assisi community sent out an announcement. I just happened to be on their mailing list because it's the 100th anniversary of Master introducing the energization exercises. So they said, we're going to focus on one energization exercise a week, and we want you to do that energization exercise with more energy than you've ever done it. That's what they're telling their people. How perfect is that? Because how many of us run through it and we do it and we're trying really hard to get it below 15 minutes and people talk about how long it takes? No, that's not the way. The way is to really say, if I do this in the right way, it's Master that I'm drawing in. It's Master that I'm channeling. All these same things that we talk about over and over, how we chant, how we sing this beautiful music, how we listen to the music. What do we see when we look into our Guru Bhai's eyes? I thought to myself today, what if we went to the chapter that Swamiji wrote in the biography of Master? And you know there's a chapter in there called Salient Characteristics of Master. And Swamiji wrote, I forget how many of them there are, 30-something, I think. I can't remember. And some of them are, you know, something akin to he was in samadhi all the time. Well, not a bad thing to aspire to, but maybe we can't do that. But things like he saw the best in everyone. There are many, I looked through just the first 15, and I thought to myself, yeah, 10 of these, I could work on 10 of these. What if we took one of them, and if we kept saying, yes, Master said, when I get there, when you know you are a dream, as I now know, we will be ever awaken him. Why not now? He is waiting for us. It is what he wants, what he came to give, what he spent those last 2 years of his life waiting. Never mind that he's promised us he'll come back a trillion times. He said those words. And he was not prone to hyperbole. He meant it a trillion times. If even one soul is waiting, we can do all we can to make sure that we're not the soul that brings him back, like something like maybe after 10 million or what? Let's just get on it. There are so many things we can be doing and so much help that we're being given. So much love. Master, please, I beg of you, feel my love, carry it to her. And he did, of all things. I still, when I tell that story, you can't get your mind around it, which is probably just absolutely perfect. It's not what they want. It's not at all what they want. They don't want our mind. They want our heart and soul, and they want it open, like that beautiful story of St. Francis when he gave away the Bible. You remember? A woman came begging, and he always gave people who came to him something, and he had nothing but his Bible. And he gave away his beloved Bible, and then he fell on his knees, and he cried to Jesus, what have I done? I gave away your scripture. And Jesus just came right to him and said, I have written every word of that in your heart. Nothing happened when you gave away that Bible. Nothing. They are working with us. All we need to do is open our hearts and joyfully accept everything they have to give right from this moment on, right from this moment on, with greater consciousness than ever, even as we go through this beautiful program we're about to hear. Let's all listen like we've never listened before. Let's listen with our ears, but let's open our hearts and let Master come in and take charge of our lives.